Thank you for joining us on this podcast episode of SeniorLivingGuide.com podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, we have over 24 episodes and on our second season of the Senior and Caregiver Resource Podcast. And we can be listened to and followed most anywhere you enjoy your podcasts or music, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, even Alexa, and many more. I am your host, Arlene Mahoney with SeniorLivingGuide.com, and I'm excited to share the news that our National Reach website provides seniors and caregivers a one-stop shop to finding senior housing, including assisted living, skilled nursing, memory care, or even home health and caregiving services, an all easy to navigate website. And today we have our guests, Dr. Pam Trinetti and Janet Rooks. Dr. Trinetti is an osteopathic physician who specializes in geriatrics. Janet Rooks is a social worker and a dementia care specialist. They work together at the Parish Senior Consultation Center, where they focus on the care of patients with dementia. Dr. Trinetti is the Director of Aging Services at Parish, and Janet works coordinates Parish Senior Solutions, which provides education, resources, and support for seniors and their caregivers. Welcome, ladies.
Hello.
Thank you.
Good morning. So we're going to talk about a subject that's really near and dear to my heart, because it's something that I think is important to talk about, and finding solutions in order to provide those resources to seniors and their caregivers that is so desperately needed. We're going to talk a little bit about nursing homes, hospitals, office visits. Oh, my.
Yes, we're going to help you take that journey.
Yes. So caring for a loved one as they travel through the medical system can be incredibly challenging. It can be overwhelming. And in all honesty, it can be a lot of work. So caregivers find themselves at the bedside or at the other end of a telephone line trying to direct their care. I mean, sometimes for long periods of time on hold, and on hold with the wrong person sometimes. How can we do this? We're going to really dig in and find some solutions for these folks.
Okay, you need to be prepared.
All righty.
So get copies of any medical reports is one of the ways to get started.
Okay.
Be honest with yourself. You know, get your head out of the sand. And you need to be realistic. You know, it may hurt, but it's going to be one of those, you know, pain for a purpose, if you will. Mm-hmm. You need to be realistic with yourself and with your loved ones. You know, see exactly what's going on and just be realistic. You know, be realistic with other family members too. Let them know what's going on, because the burden shouldn't be, and I use the word burden, but everything shouldn't be on you and taking care of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough, and it would be the hardest thing you ever did, is taking care of someone else. It really is.
It really is.
And, you know, and I feel like I'm preaching to the choir when I talk to you, darling, because I know you took care of your dad. And, you know, and be part of the solution. You know, taking care of someone you're part of a team.
Mm-hmm.
And you should build your team. And that team's going to be, you know, case management, social worker at the hospital. We'll talk more about who all's on the team a little later on,
mm-hmm.
but you know, you're going to be part of the team that's taking care of your loved one.
I think you also have to take a deep breath and know you're going to have some patience.
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and no matter how sharp your loved one is, if they're sick, you know, they're not going to remember the details.
Mm-mm.
They're not going to understand the terminology. They're not going to understand the medication. They're not going to understand a whole lot of what's being said and a whole lot of what the instructions are. It's like even in our office, when we give the instructions to the patient or the family member, we always give it to the patient and the family member, because they don't always understand what's being done or even what medical problems they have.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the world of medicine has changed so much. I grew up with Marcus Welby. Mm-hmm. Marcus Welby saw you in the office. If you went for brain surgery, Marcus Welby was scrubbing in to help the neurosurgeon. He was your advocate. You had this one-on-one connection, and now you really don't.
No.
People's insurances change, so they get different primaries. Mm-hmm. People move. The doctor who goes to the hospital and rounds on their patients, very, very rare.
Yeah, it's like who's on third.
Yeah, it kind of is. Now, this is a tough conversation to sit down and say, Mom or Dad, I want to know everything there is to know about your medical problems because I want to have access because I'm going to have to be your spokesperson. And I will actually kind of do a lighthearted thing. Like, look, if you get hit by a bus when you leave here, who are we going to call? Mm-hmm. Who should we ask to get involved? And family needs to write things down, make copies. And let me tell you what you need. You need to know the surgeries. Now, it doesn't matter as much. If you had your appendix out when you were 10,
right,
that's not as crucial as, oh, by the way, I had open heart surgery 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where? Well, I had it on at St. Mary's Hospital in Erie, Pennsylvania. Okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get that information because that way I know I can access that. Go through every organ system. Okay, what about the eyes? What's wrong with the eyes, ears, the nose, the mouth, the mm-hmm. brain, the heart, the lungs, the GI tract? And who are the doctors? Because you end up in the hospital, you have chest pain, they want to call a cardiologist. Oh, well, Dr. So-and-so has known me for 10 years. Oh, well, we didn't know that. So you're seeing their competition who has mm-hmm. none of your records. So get to know that. What medical equipment do they need? If they go to the hospital, do they need a hearing aid, a CPAP? Do they need their glasses? Do they need a walker? Mm-hmm. What kind of allergies do they have? Now, this is a fall down point that can cause a lot of trouble in an emergency situation. I have literally have people say, I'm allergic to all antibiotics. Okay, well, we're here in the ICU and you have pneumonia. What happens when you take an antibiotic? And you come to find out that they had a shot in 1967 and it hurt, so they said they're allergic to that antibiotic,
right.
And this other one gave them a yeast infection. Well, guess what? I'll save your life and worry about a yeast infection later.
Right.
But what reaction did you have? Medications and what the name of the pharmacy is, because that opens the door. I can tell if you tell me what medicines you're on, I can pretty much guess what medical problems you have. And if you tell me what pharmacy you go to, I can get all the medicines you've been put on by all the different doctors and find all your doctor's names
mm-hmm.
just from that information.
So it might be a good idea to just use one pharmacy.
Yeah, but
just
that's
a side
impossible.
Note.
Because everybody's using the long-distance pharmacy for their 90-day supply, and then they use the local pharmacy when they need an antibiotic. But you're right. You're absolutely right. It's whether or not that's doable. Get with the 21st century,
I'm telling you. I'm just trying to keep it simple. Keep it simple. So how can a person get this information?
Well,
it's a lot. What you just read off, it is mind-boggling. It's a lot. And for a family or a caregiver or a power of attorney, this is a very big process.
Well, Darlene, you have all your stuff written down, right, and given to a family member, so if you get hit by a bus, they'll have all this information on you?
That is a negative.
Uh-huh.
Well, you have something to work on this
That's
weekend.
Right.
Epic fail from the beginning.
Physician, heal thyself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the doctor's offices and the hospitals have this new thing, or fairly new, it's called a portal. And they will ask you, do you want access to the portal? And it's simple to get access to the portal. And there's all your medical records is there on the portal. Now look for accuracies in the dictation, the doctor's dictation. If you find something that's inaccurate, bring it to their attention. Now you can't change it, but the doctor, the physician that was the author of that report can change it, but mm-hmm. they need to know that it's inaccurate.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably important for family members, caregivers, what have you, to sit down and go through this portal with their seniors, because not all seniors are going to, especially if you're having some cognitive issues or some mm-hmm. issues with technology, that are going to be able to maneuver through a online portal.
That's absolutely true.
Okay.
And the other thing is you have to remember, what are doctors doing? We're dictating.
Mm-hmm.
And we dictate very fast. You know, this patient has a history of smoking and a history of drug abuse. Blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it gets typed, has a history of drug abuse. That's in your medical record now.
Mm-hmm.
If it's wrong, somebody needs to know about it and change it right away, because that gives you a whole different constellation of possible illnesses.
Right.
Yeah. And it's going to go with you forever until because it's going to get picked up by the next doctor that sees that report. You know, go to the appointment with your loved one. Go to the doctor's appointment. Now, you have to get their permission for you to go there, but, you know, you can let them know that you're there to help and go with them to the appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Meet the doctor, you know.
100%.
Meet the doctor. Let them know that you want to be there to help. You're not there to take the place of anything, but you're there to help. You want to be part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Ask for copies of their medication list, but bring your copy of your list too. Now, if you go over and I'll just say, you know, you're there and I'm taking my mom to the doctor and I've got her medication list, but I go over and there is a tub full of prescription bottles and over-the-counter things, and her medication list has 8 things on it.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to take that tub with you, because she's not going to listen to me.
Right.
She may not listen to anything, but she's going to listen to the doctor.
Exactly.
Because the doctor says,
please bring the tub in.
Because the MA is going to go through it. The doctor's going to go through it. And they're going to say, well, this needs to be eliminated. And this is going to, and, you know, you can get rid of those expired prescriptions through the at the fire department, the police department. They have drug disposal sites. Don't flush them down the toilet.
Yeah, and I think sometimes when you're meeting the doctor, you're going to ask questions that maybe they don't. I know that both of my parents didn't ask a lot of questions. They just
listened.
They just listened and they did what the doctor told you, because I think that's almost something they were kind of taught to do. The doctor knows everything. And not that they don't know everything per se, but I would ask more in-depth questions that I'm not 100% sure were not in the back of their minds, but they just never would question the doctor. And then I would write them down. And then a lot of times I would almost know sometimes the answer that the doctor was going to say, but I needed my mom or dad to hear it from them. If they were, you know, like nutrition or exercise or some of the things that they weren't doing that I knew they knew they should be doing. So that's another reason, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's often a real eye-opening experience that, you know, what did the doctor say? Oh, nothing, I'm fine. Nothing, I'm fine. Nothing, I'm fine. And then you come in and say to the doctor, why haven't you done an echocardiogram on my mom with her heart? Well, here's my notes. I've offered it at every single visit for the last year. And she said, no, I don't want to be bothered with that.
Right.
I don't want to, I'll need a ride and I don't want to bother my daughter. And the family's like, wait, we will do anything. We will take you anywhere. But you don't even realize that you and the doctor are on the same page.
Yeah, and like my mom, he was very concerned about her nutrition, because she had ovarian cancer, and he was concerned about some of the labs coming back on her organs, and it was due to a lack of receiving proper nutrition. And I was worried about my mom. I did not know. I wasn't with her 24/7, so I didn't know the extent of what she was not properly eating. She was just not putting enough protein and certain things in her body that she would tell the doctor, well, I'm eating properly. And I'm sitting there going, that's not enough. That's not what you're doing. I'm not, what you're conveying to him is not what I'm personally seeing. So it became a conversation where not him and I ganging up against her, but basically saying, calling her out on what she's telling him is not factual, where he has to understand that she's not eating properly. So it becomes a bigger conversation in improving some of those dietary needs.
And those are very, very difficult because she's sitting there getting madder and madder and madder. And the doctor is saying, okay, how am I going to deal with this? And, you know, it's one of those tough things.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. Well, he used to use some humor to kind of get to her.
Yeah.
And she really respected him. So that was the upside of it. But yeah, I mean, I think it's as, yeah.
In our office, we pull the family out and get the nitty gritty. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts.
Yeah, exactly. So if you get that phone call that someone's in an emergency room, so these can happen. I know this happened with my dad. I get this phone call that something's happened to him and he's calling me, and then he puts someone on the phone that I don't know who it is, that he's having an issue in a he's having an issue in an emergency room, and to come, and I don't even know what's going on. So what is it that you do at that point?
Well, there's two different scenarios. One is you show up in the ER, and the other is you're doing everything by phone. Now, you have to understand, okay, who are the players? Who are the people involved? First, you have EMS, or you have a witness who said, I'm the neighbor. I found your dad laying here, and I've driven him to the hospital. You have the triage team out front. They're the ones who say, why are you here in the ER? Well, this happened. Okay, they write it down. They start writing orders. Then you have the nurse, and then the doctor or the PA or the provider. And it's like a game of telephone, mm-hmm. because I have had to call in and talk to the ER team, and what they told me happened, or I read their report, and what they say happened is totally different than what the family who called my office and said, or something's wrong, or the right. assisted living team, totally different. And then you have, from the ER to the admission doctor or nurse practitioner, what's the full story?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be prepared when you get that phone call to have, reach over, have all of your information right at your fingertips.
Yeah. And, you know, we recommend you keep a notebook. Mm-hmm. Write down who you talked to. Was it the doctor? Was it the nurse? You know, get their name and, you know, find out who they are. I like the notebooks, the little pocketed notebooks, mm-hmm. so that when you get those loose pieces of paper or any reports or anything like that, you can stick them down in there so you can keep everything together. You know, I'm really bad about writing things down on loose pieces of paper.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got those little pockets to put things in there. Write down the patient's room number, your loved one's room number in this notebook you have. Mm-hmm. The room number down there. Write down any new symptoms they've got. You know, the nurse or the doctor may tell you, or your loved one may say, well, you know, my stomach hurts really bad. So that you can relay it to the person that needs to know. You know, tell the nurse. You know, don't mention it to the person that's cleaning the room.
Right.
Tell the person that needs to know, you know, what's going on. Mm-hmm.
It's probably good to write a time down next to that as well. So if you're, because sometimes when you're in the ER or you're in the hospital, the time lapse between, you know, when symptoms occur and when you're able to talk to a nurse or physician there can be a lapse sometime, in my experience. So I think maybe writing the time down at 10:50, mom really complained that her stomach hurt. So when they come back, well, how long was this? You know, how long did it last? You can at least have some good notes.
And that's great. And you know, ask them on a scale from 1 to 10 how bad it is.
You know, there you go.
That's really good.
Yeah.
You know, every 45 minutes to an hour, ask for any results, any reports, any reviews that may be going on. Mm-hmm. You know, try to stay up on what's going on. Don't just sit there real meek and mild and say, you know, well, they'll let me know when they know something. Mm-hmm. You know, don't go out and make a scene, but go out, you know, stay up on what's going on.
Right.
You know, ask for any results of any new findings of labs or x-rays. Because when you're admitted to the hospital through the ER, and they're going to be on top of things. They're going to know what's going on. That's when everything's going to be happening with labs. You're going to see the lab tech come in. You're going to see the x-ray. They're going to be taking you down. They're going to be doing all this kind of stuff. So you're going to know that things are happening. See if you can find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And get a copy of every test that is done, because it's an ER. They're looking for emergency things.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have a CAT scan of the abdomen because they're looking for a hot gallbladder. And they say, oh, it looked fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you get that CAT scan in front of you and it says, oh, look at that. There's diverticulosis and there seems to be a polyp in the bladder. And they find all these little things
mm-hmm.
that you and your primary doctor need to know about, but the ER didn't need it to get through that ER visit.
Yeah.
So copy of everything.
That is, copy of everything is just a for everything across the board, everything that you do, doctor's office visits, everything.
Exactly. Yeah. You will never see fine written on a report that as a result of anything.
Right.
You know, and review what you're waiting for and what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talk to the nurse. Okay, what are we waiting for? What's going to happen next? What time should I expect the doctor to come back around? You know, what are we waiting for?
Right, because it could be, I've called the surgeon, but he's in the operating room right now. So in a half an hour, I will get a call back. Okay, I understand that. That means that I have a half an hour to get up and get a bite, mm-hmm. and stretch my leg and call other family members.
Yeah, mm-hmm. or I can go down and just, or I can take a little short nap. I can do whatever I need to do. Speaking of getting a bite, stay hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're really bad in sitting in a hospital. We don't want to drink water because, you know, then you got to go to the bathroom. You got to do all that. So not only feeding your brain, but also staying hydrated because it's very important. Also get up and walk around the room and keep your body moving because it's a very tense, stressful time.
Mm-hmm.
And all those muscles are going to tense up. And you're going to be just, I mean, you're going to be hurting as bad, if not more so, than the person you're there sitting with, your loved one, because you're all tensed up.
Yeah, and sometimes I always remember hospital rooms just being so cold.
Yeah,
they are.
So you get to where you just try to stay warm and sit in one place, where if you get up and moved around a little bit,
yeah,
keep the blood flowing.
Absolutely, because your stress is going to come out somewhere.
Yeah.
See, I've been on the wrong side of the stethoscope. I've been sitting at that bedside. I always say it's like being a junkyard dog. You don't have to bite anybody, but you have to bark.
Mm-hmm.
So the Midwest nice, you know, no, you have to speak up. You have to make your needs known. Now, if you're sitting there, you have your little notebook, and in those side pockets are the printouts of the medication list, the allergy list, the medical problems, the doctor's names. And you're going to hand that to the right person, or you're going to hand it and say, can you make me a couple more copies, so that you have one to hand to the triage person, and then you have one to hand to the doctor, who might say, oh, I already have this. Okay, great. But if you don't, here it is. The admitting physician, here, do you have this? No, I don't. Okay, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're not there, you have to find a way to communicate. And you know, can I fax you something? Can I email something? Can I get you this information, which will ultimately save you time there in the ER, because you won't have to look all this stuff up. Give your phone number. Tell them I'm the healthcare surrogate, or I'm the power of attorney. If you have those, do you want these faxed to you? Mm-hmm. We can fax them to the ER. Honestly, you need that connection to a primary care physician. I can't tell you the number of times people have called me and said, we're sitting here in an ER. I know they're doing stuff, but I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what's going on. I can pick up the phone, call the ER doc, and say, I have a family in the waiting room. What's going on? And they might say, we need this, we need that, we're waiting. And I might say, well, I can give you that information because I have it on my computer at home. And
that is like some of the very best advice I have heard, to contact your primary care physician.
Mm-hmm.
To almost basically be an advocate if you need some help in an emergency situation.
Yeah. And sometimes we say physicians don't talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask somebody to do something for you, they usually will do it. Mm-hmm. I've heard people who try to raise money say, if you look somebody in the eye and say, will you donate to this cause? They will. If you call me and say, would you please call this specialist because I have a question, I have a little note in front of me and a feeling of obligation. Okay, I will call your cardiologist and ask if you should be on this other medicine because you asked me. We can communicate through what we call Tiger Text, which is our secure text line. I can talk to people about other patients. I can pick up the phone. There's all kinds of ways we can get information.
Yeah, and as a social worker, I talk to case management and the social workers at the hospital about things as well. I mean, it may not be the medical situation, but I talk about, you know, what arrangements have been made in advance of our patients.
And again, sometimes they're saying to the patient, what's going on? Oh, no, I can go home.
Yeah.
I'll be fine. I've got good neighbors. And then the family calls Janet and says they're about to discharge them home alone. And Janet
I go into involved. Action. No.
Right, right. So what about the primary care physicians and doctor's offices?
Yeah.
Well, you know, have your information printed with extra copies to give to them. You know, have your that information. Have a good relationship with the doctor, with the staff. You know, write down the names that you've had contact with. You know, ask the right person the right question. You know who the doctor is. Know who the medical assistant is.
Mm-hmm.
You know who the office manager is and the clerical staff. You know, make sure you're talking to the right person about the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wouldn't necessarily talk to the person at the front desk about the fact that you've got an earache. Mm-hmm. You might tell them that you need to be seen for an earache, but you wouldn't tell them, you know, what antibiotic do I need for this earache, mm-hmm. or I'm not sleeping good. What do I need to take? That's something you're going to ask the medical assistant to make sure the doctor knows about that.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm having, my dad's having behavior problems. What do I need to do? So make sure you're talking to the right person about the right thing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I think it's good to have a relationship with everyone that's in the office. I know that when I finally did get some movement on some things that were happening with my own dad, that I sent a nice thank you to them afterwards, because I want them to know that I wanted them to know that I appreciated what they did do, and some of the things that did occur. I think it's important to show that they do work hard, and for me that was a big thing. That at the end, after a lot of frustration, I did have someone that really moved some mountains, and there was a nice thank you. I think that's good, right?
Yeah, it's an easy thing to do, and it absolutely. I've heard people say, "Well, I talked to his girl." No, I never. I talk about my staff.
Mm-hmm.
I have staff members, and. Know who called you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Who's calling me about this? If I have a problem with the bill, well, I need to talk to the office manager. If I need an appointment change, I need to talk to the clerical person. If I have a medical problem, I need to talk to a medical assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have that list of who works there, you can say, well, I think Linda called me because it was about a medical problem.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Maybe like... I know that no matter really what I do, I always reiterate, who am I speaking with? And I will write it down next to whatever the conversation is. And it's just a habit that I do because no matter what that follow-up is, good or bad, I want to say I was talking with Linda and had a great experience today because I really want to reiterate that I talked with someone that was in the office no matter good or bad. So I think that's really good to be able to do that.
And at the end of the conversation, you say, thank you, Linda.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice talking with you. You know,
yeah, I think people need that uplift during the day that you've acknowledged their name and who they are, that you were engaged enough in that conversation.
And everybody will walk away, irregardless of what the information was, it'll be a win-win.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So now, medically, when you come into the office, write down your pertinent questions. Remember that the doctor might only have the time to do three things. Or one of your problems is so big that it eclipses the other. You know, I'm passing blood in my stool. That's going to take up a whole visit. But ask the important stuff first. You might not know. Or you hand them the list and say, here's my concerns today. And I might say, well, these two actually go together. They're symptoms of the same illness. Or this over here we've talked about before. I'll say don't double dip.
Okay.
Folks will come in and say, I have this skin lesion. What do you think? And I'll blah, 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 blah. I've spent 7 minutes of a visit, and they'll say, oh, that's what my dermatologist said. Well,
that was the second opinion, don't you know?
Yeah, I guess so. And written instructions. Nobody gets out of our office without written instructions, because it helps the patient, the family. It helps my staff, because when they call in and say, I didn't know, did doctor tell me to increase that blood pressure medicine or decrease that blood pressure medicine? They pull it up and say, oh, your written instructions say to do this. This is Janet's pet peeve.
Oh, yes.
Our HIPAA form. We take these seriously. Who are we allowed to share information with? You have a husband and a wife, and the husband says, put my wife's name down. So then when both of them are in the ER, who do we call? We don't even have a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but my son's out of town. Doesn't matter. The phone right. lines reach.
Yeah.
Put mm-hmm. a couple, three names on. Now, happens all the time. You need to tell me something a little private that you don't want to bring up in the office with your mom or dad sitting there. So either the day before you call and you say, I'd like to speak to Linda. Here are my concerns. Linda passes the word on to me and it's all okay. I absorb it and factor it into our mm-hmm. finding. Or you say, you know what? I have to go to the bathroom. You walk out to the bathroom mm-hmm. and you pull somebody aside. Or you, with all that paperwork you fill out, you kind of slide a little love note in. Please mm-hmm. show the doctor this.
That's what I did with my dad when he started showing signs of mm-hmm. dementia and cognitive decline, because he clearly was not acknowledging it and did not want to see a neurologist. And it wasn't, he seemed like he was fine in front of the doctor.
Uh-huh.
His primary, yeah, I'm just like going, you're not, I just literally, it was just frustrating on my end. So I did bring him to the side and I did slip a note that I need to talk to the doctor with my dad not present. And that's how we got the neurology referral. And then eventually, it went so quick because my dad was in pretty significant cognitive decline at that point. But so that is what I had to do in order to get that time alone with his primary. So that's a good note. So tell us about how to work with the hospital, because I think that sometimes can be one of the hardest parts is everybody talking. You have, your primary care, and then you have a hospital visit, and then maybe you have specialty. So it's really connecting all those dots.
Well, again, know who the people are. Know who your players. Know the players. So you got your hospitalists, which are the physicians that are, they are employees of the hospital or they're contractual physicians with the hospital that, rarely anymore do the primary care physicians actually see their patients in the hospital. And the operator or the floor nurse know exactly who the hospitalist is that's going to be seeing your loved one that day in the hospital. And they're there, and they're there within the hospital for the period of time that they're on duty. And they actually have an office in the hospital, and they're readily available. So they're not having to be called to come in and address whatever concern it may be. They're specialists. Most of the time that there's, whatever body part, if you will, whatever body part there may be a concern
right.
of. If it's your GI tract or whatever it may be, if there may be a body part, a specialist that needs to be called in.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the rooms have an erasable board. And it's going to say who the hospitalist is,
mm-hmm.
what specialist is involved with your care, and who your RN is.
I take pictures of that on my phone.
For
that's
the day. A great idea.
Mm-hmm. I know. It happens every once in a while.
And it mm-hmm. actually has the telephone number, mm-hmm. the extension to call the RN.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll say who the CNA is that's caring for mm-hmm. your loved one.
And that can change every day.
It does yes. change mm-hmm. every day. It tells you who the charge nurse or the head nurse is on the floor. It also tells you who the case manager is, case manager or the social worker is, and their extension, their phone number.
And what do they do?
And what the social worker is going to, or the case manager is going to be working on the discharge plan. And you say, well, they just got here. Yeah, discharge planning starts the day they get into the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, they're sick. Yeah, but you got to find out what
next
the assessment mm-hmm. is of what living arrangements, what was their prior living arrangements prior to coming into the hospital, what plans will be when they leave the hospital. Now, keep in mind, that's subject to change, but if they came in, say, for instance, they came in and they've got a fractured hip, they lived alone, chances are they're not going to be going back home
right.
to live alone. They may need to go to rehab or they go to someone else's home. So that's they're going to be assessed. Well, I'm not going to rehab. Well, you may, you know, it all mm-hmm. depends. But there's going to be an assessment of what the functioning status was before and what the needs may be. Also, who the patient advocate is and how to get in touch with them. Because of the fact of, you know, things happen and you may need the you need to know who the patient advocate is.
Right.
And that's somebody that's going to advocate for you if there's an issue.
I think it's important to know that there everyone has a patient advocate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, they might have a different name, like a patient experience, but mm-hmm. it is the you call the operator and say, I have a problem. I need the patient advocate.
Absolutely. Yeah. And don't be afraid to reach out to that person because it's not like you're ratting somebody out or getting someone in trouble. It may be a learning experience for both of you, for that matter. There may be a reason why, and you can fill in the blanks, but it's a learning experience.
I was at the bedside of a family member, mm-hmm. and I ended up writing about a 4-page letter to the CEO of the hospital. And I said, you can't fix something if you don't know that it's broken.
Yeah.
So here are the processes that need fixed, and by golly, they fixed them. They caused improvements.
Right.
Exactly. Because, you know, if you don't speak up, no one's going to know. Mm-hmm. The CAT team, and that's a crisis team, and that if there's something going on and it needs to be addressed immediately, and that consists of an ICU nurse, a respiratory therapist, a hospitalist, and that's reaching out for help. You mm-hmm. need help immediately. Mm-hmm. And you just pick up the phone, push 0, and tell them you need help immediately, and they will call the crisis team to get there, mm-hmm. the CAT team.
Right, and that's, you know, I think my mom's going into shock. My dad suddenly clutched his chest. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can, often we say if you pull the bell out of the wall, but ask mm-hmm. when you check in. What do I do if there's an emergency? If my dad falls, if he passes out, mm-hmm. what do I do? They might say, pull the bell out of the wall, mm-hmm. come out to the hallway, call the operator.
Yeah. And I can speak for Parrish because I was up there the other day, not as a patient, but happened to be in the hospital. They actually have on the whiteboard the CAT team and how to access them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
And so it's pretty cool. And it was how to access mm-hmm. all these folks that I'm listing. And it was really impressive. Because of in reading over this and us preparing for this, it all made sense.
Mm-hmm. I think transparency and accessibility in a hospital is super important. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I think there's a huge comfort for patients and families that come in that have that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's, you know, nothing's being hid.
Right.
It's just there. It's all about getting the patient what they need, supporting the family, and getting them the support education that they need as well. And then also there's the administrator on call. You know, who is the administrator on call? How do you get in touch with them? Because you may need, you know, they're hoping everything's going to go okay, but you never know. You mm-hmm. may need to get mm-hmm. in touch with the administrator on call. So the resources are there. You just need to know who you need to call.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So.
And a few other little hints, helpful hints. There's 5 kids. The bedside nurse cannot take 5 phone calls.
Right.
Every single shift.
Right.
One person has to be the designated person. Now, you might say, well, we're providing 24-hour care. There's somebody else sitting. But just because the neighbor comes in and is sitting in the chair doesn't mean that they're the ones who should be asked if the person should have open heart surgery. Mm-hmm. It should be, if there's a question, this is who you call all the time. Again, sit with that notebook in your lap. Write things down.
Mm-hmm.
Get on the portal. Just mm-hmm. access that way. You will have every lab test often before the doctor gets it.
Right.
And if you say, well, I want to see the doctor, when I would admit people, I would say, well, now I round between 8 and 9, between mm-hmm. noon and 1, and then later in the afternoon. Oh, well, I can be there at 8 o'clock. Great. I will see you there at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Or 12:30, whatever's going to work. And again, what are the results? What are we waiting for? What are mm-hmm. the new symptoms you're concerned about? What are we doing about, you know, their heart, their lungs, the GI tract? What about nutrition? What about medication? And I've had patients admitted out of town, mm-hmm. and I get a call from the family. My loved one went on vacation. They're at this other hospital. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what's going on. You're our primary doctor. great, I can pick up the phone, call that hospital out of town, and get all the information, and within minutes, that patient family member might get a phone call, their first update.
Once again, that's the relationship with the primary.
It is.
Care physician. Yeah.
It is. So my other little thing is hospital delirium. Yeah. And Jan, I have talked about this so much, that you get in the hospital, all of a sudden the person's confused, disoriented. Some of it's sensory deprivation. Mm-hmm. You need your glasses. You need your hearing aid. Or you need a pocket talker, mm-hmm. which is a portable hearing amplifier.
Mm-hmm.
They need somebody to talk to. They need natural light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't keep the shades closed all day.
Yeah.
Open them up so they can see the sun.
Yeah. And as I mentioned, you know, discharge planning starts on day one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be part of the solution and not, he's going to be here for, mm-hmm. we can't take him home. He needs to be here. Y'all need to come up with something.
Right.
You know, be part of the solution. And, you know, just... you're going to have to work with the team. And if insurance is an issue, then the case manager knows how to talk to advocate for him with the insurance company and with the facilities or with the providers in the community to get mm-hmm. the benefits, to determine the benefits, and then to advocate for him in talking to you to find out what's in their best interest.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Use those patient advocates, case mm-hmm. managers, uh-huh. social workers
exactly.
that work on the behalf mm-hmm. of your loved one regarding next steps. And do it in a positive mm-hmm. manner, because yeah. the negativity that's bouncing off of you, no matter how grim the it might be, because that's the reality of it, you have to stay positive at the end of the day. You have to be that positive light for the person that you love the most or that person mm-hmm. that you're taking care of. So on that note, we're going to take a break and we're going to talk about rehab hospitals and or nursing homes, skilled nursing, those types of things right after this break.
Parish Healthcare, we believe every life is poetry in motion, motivated by strength and determination. As your bone, muscle, and joint healthcare partners, we believe in blending the art of healing with the science of medicine to keep your body in motion. We believe in healing patients, healing families, and healing communities. For a free orthopedic health assessment, visit parishhealthcare.com/ortho-aware. Parish Healthcare, where the art of healing comes to life.
Hey, Mom, how's retirement home search coming?
Oh, my gosh. I'm just so stressed out. I don't even know where to begin.
Well, why are you so stressed? What's the matter?
I don't know where to find anything. I just need everything in, like, one place and know what all the options are.
Does the idea of searching for senior housing seem overwhelming? And you just aren't sure where to even begin? SeniorLivingGuide.com has great news for you. We offer a one-stop solution to take the stress out of your senior housing search. At SeniorLivingGuide.com, both our statewide Florida edition book and website are created to make your senior housing search very easy for you to navigate. We provide details on communities, including retirement, assisted living, skilled nursing, memory care, and home health, allowing you to decide which best fits your needs and then connecting you directly with those communities. Visit us online at SeniorLivingGuide.com. And start your search today and start de-stressing.
At Parish Healthcare, we believe in our community. We believe in keeping our community safe. We believe in the art of healing. We believe in healing patients, healing families, healing communities. We believe in the best and brightest working together for the common good. At Parish Healthcare, our team focuses on you as an individual because every life is a work of art to us. Parish Healthcare, where the art of healing comes to life. Visit parishhealthcare.com/healthaware for a free health risk assessment.
Thank you for joining us on the second half of this podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about rehab hospitals and nursing homes, because this is what happens sometimes when seniors have been in the hospital and they need that second layer of care. You want to expand on that a little bit, Janet?
Well, yeah, discharge planning is the case manager or the social worker will go in and assess a patient for what their needs are going to be post-hospitalization. Mm-hmm. Now, that usually starts the day after they're admitted to the hospital, and you think, well, you know, if they're going to be in there for a while, how are you going to know what their discharge plans are going to be? Well, they need to get a baseline. They need to figure out or assess what their functional status was before, mm-hmm. to see, you know, were they living alone? Will they be able to return home? Were they living in assisted living? Will they be able to return to that assisted living? Do I need to reach out to that assisted living facility? Is it an option?
Right.
You know, there's a whole lot of questions.
Yeah, there really is a lot of variables.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, they start peeling the layers, if you will, at that time. So they start the discharge planning at that time when talking to the patient. They'll reach out to the family. They'll reach out to the facility. If it looks like it's going to be rehabs needed because of a stroke, a fracture, something like that, then they'll go ahead and reach out to the facility and make a referral. Then the facility will then determine at what point they will come and do their assessment. The skilled nursing facility will put them on the list as far as that as well. And if it's going to be a new admission into an assisted living facility, you know, there's some back behind the scene work that has to be done with that as far as referrals and assessments and this sort of thing. And if the goal is to rehab and then to return home, then that all that springboard work needs to be done as well. You know, the social worker and or the case manager, they don't really need to know the financial information, but they may ask that because the facility is going to ask.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I will ask sometimes, well, you know, financially is about the assisted living facility because the facility is going to ask.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to send someone that doesn't have the finances to pay for an assisted living facility. I'm not going to gear them in or steer them in a direction when I know it's not an option.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's what it is. In an assisted living facility, we can get home care coming in there. In a skilled nursing facility, we look at the rehab that they may need. In an acute rehab facility, you know, they're going to get 3 hours of therapies a day. Mm-hmm. So you look at what the patient may need, mm-hmm. and what's available for them. But the discharge planner, the social worker, they know those benefits. They know what's available in the community. Mm-hmm. And so they make those assessments and they start that ball rolling in that direction. Mm-hmm. They're the advocate for the patient in talking to the doctor and the family. So they're sort of that catalyst to work together with all them. So they have that discharge meeting also with the nurse and with the rehab team, whether it be occupational therapist, speech therapist, mm-hmm. or the physical therapist that's taking care of that patient on the floor as well, to let them know, okay, this is Miss So-and-so. She's going to be going to such and such skilled nursing facility, and then she may be going to assisted living as a step mm-hmm. down before she returns home with her daughter. Right. So, you know, it's a very important role in the hospital to start that ball rolling, and it starts the day after they're admitted.
Wow, yeah.
And your role as a family member is, first of all, to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe your insurance company says, well, we have a contract with skilled nursing facility A, B, and C. Pick mm-hmm. one of those. Otherwise, we've seen families who say, well, I went online and I found that this rehab facility an hour and a half away seems to have more stars next to its name.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be realistic. Would you rather go somewhere where you have a little more community connection, you can visit,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to something an hour and a half away? And also that, Janet, you mentioned in a rehab hospital,
uh-huh.
it's 3 hours a day of therapy. In a skilled nursing facility, it's more an hour a day.
Exactly.
And generally Monday through Friday.
Exactly.
And sometimes that's pretty much all the patient could take.
Yeah. And two, you know, if you have a managed care, they dictate what's available, what contracts they mm-hmm. have with the skilled nursing facilities, or if they would cover an acute rehab hospital. So sometimes your choices are limited based upon the insurance coverage with a managed care. So, you know, just because your neighbor went to such and such rehab may not be your option if in fact you have a managed care.
Right. I strongly encourage that if they give you three or four options, that you go visit every single one. And you deep dive, go visit. You don't just go to the office and look at the front and it smells amazing and looks beautiful and it's super friendly. You go behind the doors and you walk around and you take really good notes on how many staff is there, how many people are there. You really do a deep dive into that and not just look at Google. You clearly want to look at Google reviews as well. I don't think that you want to bypass that completely, but I think it's really important to go to every single one and make sure that that's somewhere where you can see your loved one being. And I do agree, I mean, if you want to drive an hour and a half away, I'm not sure. I mean, my dad was in rehab, I went to see him every day. The idea that I would drive an hour and a half away, I wanted to be an advocate for him, so I wanted to make sure I was there every single day and they knew who I was. And so I made that a priority, is to have him close by.
Absolutely. And if you're, say, an elderly wife or husband who really can't drive an hour, you want something nearby.
Right.
When you go do that deep dive, forget about the decorations.
100%.
Go and sit quietly and listen to how the aides talk to the patient. How do they talk to each other? Sit down with somebody and say, are you here visiting? Yes, I'm here with my wife or my husband. How do you like it?
Yes.
Somebody who's experiencing right now, this minute, not a review that could have been written a year ago.
Or by a staff member.
So who is everybody? You have your floor nurse. And you want to know turnover of staff. Well, if this head nurse has been there for 10 years, she's committed to this place. She has a personal sense of personal responsibility. The nurse's aides, the CNAs. You have then the admission coordinator, who's kind of the person who's going to introduce you to this place and be the person who knows, well, how do I admit the person in, and the question about insurances. Who's the administrator? Who's ultimate responsibility? And then your physical therapist. And then the big question is, who is the doctor or the nurse?
Right.
Where are they coming from? Are they local? Are they going to be here 2 days a week? Are they going to be here once a week? Do they come from another town and just come in once a week?
And what time are they there so you can catch them?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think it's important, even in the common area, because you'll have patients in the common area, just to sit there quietly and just watch how long they're there, how attentive, what's going on in that common area. I think that's really super important as well. So go prepared to spend some time, and they're going to want to take you on a tour, but ask if you can stay and just relax and visit on your own before you make that decision.
And once you've made that decision, personalize the room, you know, because they're going to be staying there for a while. You know, let them know that someone cares. Take a box of donuts for the staff. Let them know that you appreciate what they're doing for your loved one.
Right.
Because it means a lot. You know, let them know that you really do thank them. Thank them for what they do.
Yeah, right, from the family of.
Yeah, it that what they do in those skilled nursing facilities and rehab is very, very hard work. I mean, it's a tough job what they're doing on a daily basis.
Yes, it is. And see, what we've seen over the years is, you used to be in the hospital, let's say, for open heart surgery, it was 3 weeks. Now it's 3 days. You're going to the skilled nursing facility, and families are often kind of shocked because they said, my loved one was so sick, why aren't they being seen by a doctor or nurse practitioner every day? Medicare rules say they must be seen by a provider within 3 days, and then once every 30 days. Although, many times, if you have someone, if they might say, yes, we have a nurse practitioner who's here 2 days a week. So if you're worried about them, if you think they have a urinary tract infection, if you want to know about the labs, oh, okay, they will be here Thursday morning. I will be sitting here Thursday morning, and I would like to talk to them. And what, you know, how can you call them after hours?
Right. And one thing I want to stress as well is, look at the food intake that your loved one is taking in, because you want to make sure that they're eating properly, because sometimes that can be an issue. So I would try to be there during mealtime to make sure that my dad was eating, because that's not always notated. Not that I'm saying that's not always notated, but you just want to make sure with the meals, and if not, making sure that they get their insurance and things like that. So I think it's just following up and making sure that you have to be, you still have to be, no matter where your loved one is, you have to make sure that you're being a good advocate for them.
Mm-hmm. And get a copy of the medication list mm-hmm. at the rehab facility, because what they were on at home before is going to be different than what they were put on in the hospital versus now. Sometimes all the oral medications were stopped in the hospital mm-hmm. because they were so sick.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, what if they don't get their thyroid medicine restarted?
Mm-hmm. 100% mm-hmm. on the medication side, for sure.
Oh yeah, I've seen a lot as far as with some of my support groups mm-hmm. that it's just that's a great yeah. suggestion.
Mm-hmm. And the laundry thing, I know this is such a little thing, but I would do my dad's laundry because I think they had started doing it and he lost so much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up having to buy new stuff, but I did. They have so much volume, and how many whitey tidies do you have at some point, you know? So, you know, that's one thing you have to decide and kind of realize if you have them do the laundry, you may not get everything back. But if you go up there and do your own laundry, then you can put your little fresheners, because I like to have my dad smelling good mm-hmm. and, you know, fabric softener and all this fabulous stuff. So I would make sure that those little comforts he was provided, because I did do his laundry. So you kind of have to decide, mm-hmm. you know, what you like. That's just a side note. But so what about planning for home? Because that, you know, the aging in place, the going home is definitely an option. Rehab is not always the next step.
Well, you know, choose a home care agency, a home health. You know, are they going to be safe at home? You know, we've seen so many people, oh, no, I don't want anybody there. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Back to that fine word.
I've got nice neighbors.
Yeah, I have wonderful neighbors. Mm-hmm. They'll take good care of me. You know, how much care will they actually need at home? You know, there's private duty care that's available for about between $22 and $28 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Medicare doesn't cover that.
Right.
It's either private pay, long-term care insurance if you have it, and a lot of those policies have a disclaimer that it doesn't cover for the first 90 days. Mm-hmm. That's out of pocket before it gets into there. And you know, there's VA aid and attendance, but you have to apply for it, and there's a time frame for
that takes a minimum of 3 months.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. the eligibility and everything. So, you know, it's worth it, but there's a time frame with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and is it cheaper or less expensive to go into an assisted living to get the 24-hour care mm-hmm. at an assisted living with the home care coming in there? You know, I refer to them sometimes after someone's been in the hospital or been in rehab as a step down.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's less expensive to be in assisted living than it would be home with the 24-hour care or the private duty.
Right. Mm-hmm. And clearly the assisted living is and may be a conversation that has to be had with someone that's been in the hospital and now has health issues that have to be addressed or on a daily basis
mm-hmm.
or some issues with, you know, being able to physically take care of themselves. Because I know that one, and correct me if I'm wrong, in order to go into assisted living, you have to be able to stand and pivot.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Is the one, it's like the one thing. So other than that, they can help you with the bathing. They can help mm-hmm. you with all of these different things that your loved one might need. And they do have, assisted living has private rooms, they have private bathrooms, they have a lot of the comforts of home. And you can do, you know, when my dad was in assisted living, he had his own furniture, he had his own comforts of home, he had his own blankets. So you can have that same feeling, which is what you really try to provide in an assisted living. At least we did, to give them whatever you can give, even though they're not living in their own homes, but it does keep them safe. Because I know that we've talked you know, in a past podcast, one fall away, mm-hmm. a fall can completely alter the life of a senior in a very, very negative way.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
In a split mm-hmm. second.
And I just want to emphasize one more time that, yes, Medicare pays for a skilled nursing facility or a rehab hospital. Yes, Medicare pays for home health, but that doesn't mean an RN is going to be there 24/7 to look after your loved one. They will be there maybe an hour or two or three days a week. The same, the physical therapist might be there an hour, 2 or 3 days a week. An aide might be there 2 or 3 days a week. It's what about the other 23 hours of the day? That's mm-hmm. when you need to private pay for that kind of care. Now, the only person we didn't mention is the poor primary care doctor who's in their little office, and they didn't realize that your mom or dad were in a hospital in another town. Or even if they were nearby, generally, I get notified when the patients are in the hospital. We want to see that person within 3 days if they go home. Why? Because we want to make sure that everything that was supposed to be done is getting done. Did the home health show up? Did you get the bedside commode? Did you get the oxygen? Let me look at your medicines. Let me line up my previous list, the hospital record, and now to decide what you should be on. We can coordinate the care, make the phone calls, get you the things you need so that you're safe.
Once again, that is the best advice. One of the best advices we've had on this podcast is coordinate with your primary care physician. I think people think once they've gone into rehab that they're basically on their own. They don't realize they can contact their primary care physician. So if you've done all the steps to with your loved one on knowing who their primary care physician is, some of the things they've done in the past, their medications, they can go back and contact that primary care physician for their loved one, where if they're not in the loop from the very beginning, they may be operating in a fog and they're not going to be able to get the help that they need for their loved one once they go into a rehab facility.
Mm-hmm. And now,
on the back end, I should
right.
say.
And now we may not be able to write the orders. If you call mm-hmm. and say, my mom or dad is in this rehab and we think they have a UTI,
right?
You need to get in touch with the provider. But I might be able to get in touch and say, hey, you know, and they might say, oh, we're already on it. We got that urine specimen.
Yeah.
And then my staff could call the family and say, don't worry, it's being taken care of. But a lot of times we just kind of take the burden mm-hmm. off the families who are saying, I just can't do one more thing.
Right.
I need help.
Yeah. And that's a huge burden when you are taking care of your loved one that is in a rehab or skilled nursing and you don't know and you haven't contacted the primary care physician and you're trying to navigate that whole scenario because you're unfamiliar with it. It's mm-hmm. it's new territory. So that's great to know that, but you have to do the work on the back end. So
yeah. It's like you're visiting another town and yeah. you go in the subway system yeah. for the first time.
Yeah.
What car do I get on? Which direction am I going?
It's completely overwhelming. mm-hmm. Yes, completely yeah. overwhelming for sure. And you just want to be the best advocate for your loved one. And it's a big maneuver. So, but yeah. Well, this was a great podcast, you guys. And I look forward to doing some more. And I want to really maybe dig deeper into this topic again in a future podcast. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please do not forget to enjoy these podcasts on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Alexa Podcasts, and other places where you enjoy your music or podcasts.